Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
So good, so good, so good.
Perfect gifts? We've got them at Nordstrom Rack stores now. UGG, Nike, Barefoot Dreams, Kate Spade New York, and more. Find everything on their wish list, all in one place.
Steve Madden? Yes, please.
It's perfect.
Did we just score?
The greatest gifts of all time? Yeah.
Head to your Nordstrom Rack store to score. Great brands, great prices, the greatest gifts of all time.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes see details.
Shorter days and chillier nights can make it tough to keep up your fall workout routine. Thankfully, there's Allo Moves, the app that brings health and wellness to the comfort of your home. Allo Moves offers yoga, Pilates, strength workouts, and other fitness classes, plus wellness offerings like meditations, sound baths, and more. Whether you have 5 minutes or an hour, Allo Moves has a class or flow that saves you from a frigid trip to the gym. Get a 30-day free trial and 20% off an annual membership with code ACAST at allomoves.com.
And welcome, everybody, to this week's exciting episode.
Lila Champagne.
It's pronounced champagne.
I don't know the rest of the
episode. He just starts crying. Please don't start crying.
No. He's actually probably one of the best characters in Futurama, isn't he?
Yes.
He's up there.
He's up there, yeah. Just below Bender.
Yeah.
Bender is literally the greatest cartoon character ever.
Yeah, ever. He is your fave, isn't he?
Yeah, that's why I got a tattoo of him on my arm. It's hard to see, but he is there.
Yeah, I always thought Dr. Zoidberg was good as well.
Zoidberg!
You told me his real name was John.
John Zoidberg, yeah.
I had no idea. I thought he was just Dr. Zoidberg.
Dr. John Zoidberg. And it only comes up in like one episode where Farnsworth calls him by his first name.
Mm.
Listen, John, or whatever. Yeah, but it is, yeah.
See, I love it when shows do that. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen it, Always Sunny.
I tried that, I couldn't get on with it. I know you like it.
Oh,
Always Sunny in Philadelphia, is it called?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a character that they just keep referring to as the waitress. And
right.
And she screams, and she's like, none of you know my real name. There's one episode where they have a high school reunion, and Danny DeVito sneaks in with them. And obviously, he didn't go to high school with them. So he steals a name tag. And then she turns up and she's like, oh, no one even knows I exist. Someone took my name tag. And if you're a fan of the show, you kind of work out that, oh, that's her real name. And they same again. They mention it once in that one episode.
Right.
And then the rest of the whole show for 9 seasons or whatever, they just call it The Waitress.
Fair play. Yeah, I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
Little hidden gems like that. Yeah.
It's cool, man.
Yeah, it is.
Continuity, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah.
What you got for us today, mate?
We got some continuity.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay, so first of all, I got to say, I just got back from my little holiday that I told you about last week.
Yes.
And on the last, well, I say the last day there, it was the morning of our last day, my now fiance proposed while we were there. So, yes. Congratulations, me. She woke up and she went, I got a cold. So I obviously now have a cold as well.
Mm.
And I'm going to have to carefully edit out all the times that I'm going to be blowing my nose throughout this episode because I cannot go more than 5 minutes without blowing it. And I'm not too coffee, so I'm not too hoarse or anything like that, but it is literally just a bunged up nose that is kind of annoying me. So my N's and D's might sound the same. And I might have to edit out a few nose blows. But we are continuing with an old podcast that we did over a year ago now. Well, it was actually a double parter where we discussed Ingo Swann remote viewing the moon.
Axelrod,
yeah, all of that. Really interesting story. Now, in the book Penetration, which I have here, I have the special edition, which is an updated version, which actually contains some stuff that I don't think Ingo intended to publish with this book in its original format. So the publication team added to it, and it is about Ingo and some associates remote viewing the planet Mars.
Ah, so last time they went just to the moon, didn't they?
Yeah.
And they saw structures.
Structures, people, you know, could be alien people. They're not entirely sure where they were from. But this time, they were asked to go to Mars. Well, they did it twice. The first time was 1975.
That was the first time they went to Mars.
Yeah. Pretty much the same. Right about the same time that they did the whole remote viewing the moon. He also did a remote viewing of Mars with a friend called Harold Sherman. I'll read an extract from the book here just to give you some backstory.
Mm.
In 1975, with some modicum of interplanetary remote viewing success under our belts, Harold Sherman and I planned a Mars probe in advance of the first Viking touchdown. Viking missions was NASA's mission to Mars, like its first sort of lander on Mars. Yeah.
Okay. Is that similar to like Apollo was to the moon? Or is that...
You're not manned, but yeah.
Okay, so it's just the name of like the mission kind of...
Yeah, one of the first missions to ever land on Mars was the Viking missions, yeah. There were certain difficulties with regard to Mars, which differed considerably to those of Jupiter and Mercury. Oh, they've also remote viewed Mercury, but that's a different point in the book. If you want to pick up this book for yourself, or if you already have, then you probably know a bit more about that. A great deal was known about Martian conditions, and lest Harold and I merely repeat what was already known, we decided to read up on the planet and become grounded in existing knowledge about it. In research, this reading up about a target in advance of psychically travelling to it is called front-loading. When in the practical application of remote viewing, clients wanted a distant site looked at, they were obviously interested in what was not known or hard to find out about it. Most of the usual intelligence-gathering methods are very good, but their efficiency is dependent upon penetrating into areas of which the usual methods have little or no access. The remote viewer front loads because he or she does not want to waste time providing information that is already known. And the front loading will make it easier for the remote viewer to recognize what is strange or unexpected about the site. What Harold and I would be looking for in Martian environs were phenomena not presently known by science. And to determine this, we had to front load ourselves with what was known about the planet. Okay, so that's just a short summary of this particular chapter. Okay. I'm not going to go into.
So they was basically saying they were looking for things that science couldn't find. Is that right?
Right. So as I said, that the Viking lander was on its way to Mars at this point.
Okay.
So the same as where the I think was it Voyager or something was going to Jupiter. So they looked at they tried to see what Jupiter would be like, and so when these NASA probes sent information back, they could then cross reference it to what they discovered.
Okay.
You know, to see how accurate they were, to see if they were correct. So the Mars Viking mission was on its way there, and they wanted to remote view it to see if they could see what was there ahead of time, and then again, like I say, cross-reference that information with what was known.
That's also quite good, because then you could work out whether that's a hoax or not as well.
Yeah.
Really. Because if someone's front-loading and saying that, oh, there's, you know, a steeple or like a cave or whatever on Mars, and then this thing, the Viking, finds those things, well, you know it's not a hoax then.
Hold on to that thought.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Now, like I said, this chapter, or this later part of my version of the book, wasn't intended to be published. This is taken from the desk of Ingo Swann, as far as I know, after his death, and was included in the publication of this special edition.
So there's a bit of mystery here.
Yeah, there's a handwritten note by Ringo, Ingo himself, not Ringo.
Ringo Starr.
Wasn't a member of the Beatles, no, Ingo. It says, Dear Harold, this is top secret. Russell's come through with a NASA official who is going to help us on this. We don't want to spoil this by premature announcements. Love, Ingo. And now, this part of the book is, as you can see, the writing is very, very small. It's literally the transcripts of what they said, that's just been copied into the book. I'm not going to read Harold Sherman's responses with his remote viewings. I'll read Ingo's. So, psychic probe of Mars 1. They do this 3 times, by the way.
Three trips.
Ingo and Sherman do it twice back in the 70s, and then it's about 10 years later they have another trip there, but we'll get to that. So Ingo says, when you try to leave Earth, I guess the belts around sort of take hold. Anyhow, I've risen out of the night side of Earth, and I see the sun. And I now have to go to the other side of the sun to find Mars, because Earth and Mars are at their furthest, almost at their furthest proximity from each other. I don't know why they call the sun a yellow star, because it looks pretty white. It has an enormous halo, which looks lavender. Mars looks like a fuchsia-coloured pinpoint. I thought it would look orange. It's a long way away. I seem to sense extending from that, I guess it's Mars, an enormous, what would you say, a magnetic penumbra? Is there such a thing as negative magnetism? Anyhow, sort of extending enormously far out from the planet is sort of a magnetic condition which must polarise the sunlight just a little bit. So when you get inside that, the sun looks a little darker. There we go. This magnetic shell, call it a shell, all around the planet must be at least 350,000 miles outside the planet. The magnetosphere around Mercury was very active, and the contrast to Mars, which seems to be very peaceful, I guess I'm approaching Mars on its day side, and it's now turning. It's losing the deep colour it had, and it's now turning pink, or maybe golden yellow. Compared to Earth, it has to be composed. It seems more dense anyway. It's strange. I don't see either moon. They must be on the other side somewhere. That must be the upper atmosphere, which is extremely cold. I get the impression of these must be dust particles, which, as I go closer now to the surface, obscure it and make it hazy. I'm not sure what a convection current would be, but it appears that there are air currents, maybe like ocean currents here on Earth, but these are in the air. In other words, you have one area where it is dust in the atmosphere, but it is not moving too fast, and in other places it's moving like a long current. There's an intense softness, like if you made a sound on Mars, it might get stopped by a soundproof room here. I guess audio frequencies may get absorbed by the heavy dust in the atmosphere. The area where I got to is filled with dust. Let's see now, how do I move somewhere else? Some of these currents move almost in straight lines, as it looks like. Why should that be? It's almost as if the air, or the atmosphere there, are extremely high and low pressure areas that tend to discharge towards each other, creating those currents that can almost go on in a straight line. I just found what looks like a cliff, which contrasts enormously to the dusts. It's extremely hard of some sort, like granite, but it isn't. Maybe that's like a volcanic conglomerate, something like that. Anyhow, it seems yellowish with black in it, and it glitters here and there like it has silicates in it. That was the cliff I bumped into. If I go up to the top of the cliff, there's a huge overdraft. I wonder what kind of dust or sand it would be that when it's blowing around in the air, it is very soft and fine, and when it settles, it packs in very hard right away. Anyhow, there's a lot of this. On top of the cliff seems to be now great plain, and the wind blows off the cliff and seems to cut along long straight lines in this heavier stuff. I guess this is the extreme wind erosion taking place all the time. When it breaks the particles loose, they suspend in the air very easily, and when they do settle, they pack in very hard. I follow the plane that looks very flat. This area where I am is very dry. The surface in the sunshine seems to be about 80 degrees, but if you go up 5 feet, it drops to about 50. I see in the distance, I have the impression I am now moving northwest. In the distance, I see some mountains which seem to be black or reddish brown, I guess. I guess a warm surface contrasted to if you go up 100 feet in the air, it is very cold. This might give rise to these extremes. I want to call them convection currents. I'm not sure what they are. In these mountains, I see that these must have been laid down at one time as on top. I can see various strata, and toward the bottom, I see a great big layer of what looks sandstone, and it's carved out. It has scopes in it. That's from the wind. Wind caverns, and then on top of that is obviously a harder substance which sticks out like a ledge over the other area. Higher up on these mountains, once you get out of the dust, you can hear the wind screaming, one of my favourite sounds. In places, these mountains look damp, like the rocks are extruding something. It doesn't seem like this is water. It seems like something else. These mountains must be about 8,000 feet high. Very impressive. I'm going over them and I see a crater. First one is very large. There are whirlwinds in the crater, but they hardly look like that. But hardly like the tornadoes we saw on Jupiter. I see maybe three of them. I wonder if the dust that I first looked at might be composed of not earth at all, but spores. I've come to an area now that looks like it has something like lichens, but they're reddish and maybe with green casts. This must be some sort of vegetable, a thing that grows one right after another, like on chains. Chains, there we go. Like Nutella plants that I've worked with, you know? Just one after another, and the way they decompose, they break apart and go up in the air. It seems very trite to say that if I go now, what must be the further north? I hope I'm not in the South Pole. Maybe I'm doing it backwards. How do you tell if north or south? It must be the north. These lichens turn greenish further on where there is... looks like it must be water crystals in the atmosphere where the planet curves, so the sun doesn't heat it so much. There must be water crystals, and they form on water crystals. The lichens do. I was tempted to say back in the crater that I passed over something that looks like squares, maybe 100 feet, like a checkerboard. That's a rough thing to say, but those look like they're man-made, but ruins, really old.
There's some bold claims there.
There are some bold claims.
The vegetables stick out to me.
Vegetables, yes. Seem like structures.
8,000-foot mountains?
8,000 feet. Now, he's not wrong.
Okay.
Mars has the biggest mountain in the solar system that we know of.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a volcano, in actual fact.
Oh, right.
Yeah, dormant. But yeah, it does have the biggest volcano in the solar system. The name escapes me right now, typically. But yeah, he's not wrong in pretty much everything that he said there. The only thing that we don't much know about is the lichen plants. Now, from orbital photographs, before we actually landed on Mars, it was proposed that there could be trees and vegetables. Just from like distant photographs made it appear like there was, you know, vegetation and such like that. When we landed on Mars, the photographs that were taken, or at least the ones that were produced to the public, shows complete lack of vegetation or anything like that. Sherman also said in his notes that I'm just skipping over here that he saw a lot more vegetation in his visits. But again, but we don't see any evidence of that actually on Mars itself.
I'm sure I heard years ago, I don't know if it was a scientist or what, but I remember seeing like a documentary where they mentioned that there was like some sort of microorganisms on Mars. Like that's been proved. If this was the 70s, then maybe since then they've come out and said...
I don't know. I've not heard any official responses that there is life on Mars apart from David Bowie.
Yes. Okay.
Life on Mars.
Mars is the planet that, if we could move potentially, that's the only planet that has
it would somewhat... be the easiest to terraform into a livable planet, yes, but it would still take thousands of years to do that.
Yeah, we won't be around.
No, we certainly won't be around. Like I said, I think the quickest proposed idea of terraforming Mars take at least like 10,000 years, something like that.
And what's the deal with the water crystals, man?
There is evidence of water on Mars. It's normally found in permafrost, which is basically groundwater that's frozen. Now, this is one of the things that that I'd like to point out that is kind of wrong about it. But I don't know whether their psychic reviewing makes it alters their perception of the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mars's average temperature is about minus 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay, on average.
Yeah, on average. And that's sort of at the equator looking at the sun. If you go to, like, if you were in Mars winter or up on the poles, it reaches nearly minus 200 Fahrenheit, which is about minus 120 degrees Celsius. So they both claimed that at the surface level it felt warm to them. I don't know if that's just their psychic temperature gauge. You know, compared to deep space, it would be, you know, minus 80 Fahrenheit is balmy.
Yeah. I find it bizarre because it's almost like they're physically there. If they can feel warmth and spores and see textures of things.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're actually there, but they're doing all of this through their mind.
Yeah.
Almost, what, is it like hypnotism in a way? Like a trance?
It's kind of like a trance, yeah. I'm not sure if hypnotism is the right analogy, but yeah, they kind of go into a sort of a trance, and yeah, they transport their own mental state to where they've got to go and then receive input from it.
I've got two more questions for you.
Go for it.
Is Axelrod involved in this in any way?
No.
Okay.
No, Axelrod's gone.
He's gone.
Yeah.
And are Ingo Swann and Sherman, are they, they're both able to remote view, and they've both had a fairly like good success rate by the sounds of it?
Yeah. Sherman, I think, was trained by Ingo to be able to do it. And because of his success rate, I think Ingo chose him for this project.
Right, okay.
So, Psychic Probe of Mars 2. This was January 29th, 1976. So, this is Ingo again. Looks like that at the North Pole, you can see them very nicely if you go a little ways outside of the Earth's outer atmosphere. The Northern Hemisphere seems to be pretty much brilliantly covered with aurora borealis. Very beautiful tonight. Also, as I go further out, I don't know how we'd ever find out, but there is a phenomenon which I've never noticed before. Such things as magnetic storms in space. It seems very easy just to be at Mars, but I like to slow the perception down so we can have an approach to the planet. It seems extremely red or pinkish, much more brilliant than last time. I think I might have to say that there are some dust storms going on, and those are dust particles. Now I can touch it. I'm getting deeper in towards the planet, and I can sense or feel the wind. The winds are blowing. It seems to be a different season than when we were here before. I mentioned last time the thermal layer of air very close to the planet's surface and the cold layers are above it. This time, I suppose it's the winds, there seems to be a different environment. I would say the winds are strong, but not strong. I think I read about 200 miles per hour. These must be more like those Santa Ana winds in Los Angeles, which I think go about 70 upwards, somewhere around in there. I think I've come down in the area of this big volcano, Olympus Mons, that's what it's called. I see some tornadoes off in the distance and lightning. I have a sense that the lava shield around the volcano is very high mineral content in it, like lots of iron. Inside the dust cover, the atmosphere cover, the air color seems reddish. I see two colors of lightning, one yellow and one greenish. I think the air is very dry, but I get a sense of mud also in various places. I don't know how that could be. Oh, let's do the coordinates. So his Janet Mitchell, his assistant, reads 19.5 north, 34 degrees west. I didn't seem to shift my perspective too much. It seems near the same place I was. Would you tell me again? 19.5 north, 34 degrees west. Okay, I've shifted a little bit to what must be the southeast, and this brought me very near on a plane. Descending to the south is a series of what looks like cliffs and fractures going south. I get the impression what looks like to me like a ground at this point. It has been swept like a broom, and it seems to be very hard rock and small cracks in it like shale. It breaks in the wind a little bit. It looks like shale. It looks like reddish to dark brown colour. It seems to me that if the Viking lands here, it will land on rock. I see some sort of yellow hills to the east. It seems twilight at this site. This is where they're actually scoping out the actual coordinates that they've been given. So now we're at 20 degrees north, 252 west. I seem to be on a higher plateau now. Not too much higher, but higher. At this site, I see pebbles, sort of pebbles, and something that looks definitely like caked mud, as if there's been water here and it's all evaporated. There's still some left in the mud. It looks like a huge basin of some sort. I forgot if this one is in a basin or not. One of them is in some sort of a place like this. This mud sort of stands up on ridges. I wonder if this is like as ground melted, parts of it melted faster than others, and there were some little cave-ins, and this created little small water rivulets, and it left little drainways. It looks up and down like that, gesturing waves. I'd say from about little piles from 3 inches to 9 inches or a foot, but it's definitely dried out. It's caked. I was looking at something. I couldn't figure out what it is. I think these are worms. Small little tiny worms. Is there such a thing as sandworms that maybe could live in dry sand or wet mud? I'd say that's life, wouldn't you? Okay, let's do the next one. Janet says 44.3 north, 10 degrees west. I moved immediately to a site that definitely has some liquid about it, swampish. Can you give the coordinates again? 44 north, 10 degrees west. I'm still hung up on the worms. This one ends me up in some sort of a flat area with some moisture quality about it. There looks to be something that looks like lichens growing all over it, and they are green and grey. I wonder if this could be something like I have heard in the northern Canada. I guess permafrost melts in the ground and it sort of gives in and becomes a little soggy here and there, and kind of mould grows immediately, even on the ice. Of course, the ice is in the ground. It's liquid. I have the feeling that this is sort of on the edge of a receding... maybe that's a polar cap receding? Sort of like a lichen-like mould. I'm pretty sure it'll dry out and blow away in the wind. I guess billions of spores. I'm struck by the fact, although I don't see it, but I wonder if this is a type of plant life that goes through one cycle as mould and another as a small plant. The kind we talked about before. I don't know how 4 degrees latitude could make so much difference, but there seems to be a great deal of difference between what is happening here and what is happening a little further south. Can we go to the next one? 44.2 north, 110 west. I seem to have passed over a big canyon. This brings me to a place that looks like it's white with red dust on it, but it's definitely melting. There is melting quality here. There is some lightning in the distance, and it gleams in the moisture. I don't know if it's water or something else, so I'd be inclined to say that is water. I suppose it could be spring here. This must be much higher elevation. Maybe that's why there is still ice here. It looks like ice of some sort to me. Further to the west, I see a tall uplift of some sort which looks black or dark. I'm tempted to say that I moved to the darker portion, darker side of the planet, and I seem to be in the air. Some phosphorus glow. It's glowing a little bit. Phosphorescent. That's fascinating. Okay, it says, can you give me a fuller description of the worms, like the colour and the size? He says, before I was tempted to say that these are little tiny worms that have fur on them, furry worms. They're a whitish-grey. Maybe some of them are darker, like black. I think there must be several different sizes. It reminds me of that novel, Dune. That was good, where the worms eat the mud and take the spores or whatever and is in the mud and digest those and defecate out of the earth. I think they are very busy doing something like this. I bet you they can get frozen and still be alive. Ed, is there anything that you think I should look at? Ed says, colour impression of the heavy water. It seems clear, maybe with a slight blue glint, bluish to it. But it is definitely coming from something white, which I take it must be frozen. Whatever it is, it's frozen white.
So good, so good, so good.
Just in and so good. Thousands of winter deals are in Nordstrom Rack stores now. And that means thousands of fresh reasons to rack.
Because we get the latest trends for way less.
Because I've been looking for these.
Because the best deals go fast.
Save big with up to 60% off. Sam Edelman, Sorel, Free People, Cole Haan, and more cold weather finds. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 upfront payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes. See details.
Right. May I ask you one more question? Yes. Which sites do you think they will actually use? I don't know. That's a prediction. That's where they pretty much stopped.
What's weird is I was thinking Dune, like 2 minutes before you mentioned it.
Yeah.
I was picturing it as you were saying it, and I was thinking, that sounds a lot like Dune. So now we've gone from vegetables to worms.
Worms.
Being on Mars.
Yes.
One of my little Joshisms, when you were explaining that, I just had a thought that's completely random that has somewhat to do with what you're talking about.
Go for it.
It's only just dawned on me that all the planets and everything don't have the at the front of it, but we call it the moon. And I know the moon isn't a planet, but why is it? Why did we not just call it moon? Like Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, moon. But it's always the moon. Is there a reason for it, or is it just what we've known?
I guess it's because it's our moon. Because a lot of planets have moons. Jupiter's got over 90 of them.
Ah, okay.
Mars has 2.
Oh, but because we've got one, that's
it's just the moon.
Oh.
It's the original moon, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, okay. That makes sense, actually. So going back to what you were saying, worms?
Worms. Never seen any evidence of worms on the moon. On Mars. Mm. But as we're about to discover, there's a lot of stuff that we've never been told about Mars. Now, in 1984, I think it was, Ingo was approached by the government again. Yeah, June 1984. And they approached him with a picture from the Viking lander of a pyramid on Mars.
Oh, wow, an actual pyramid.
A pyramid on Mars. And they asked him if he would remote view it.
But they didn't pick this up before
the
Viking.
The problem that he had with this is that he'd been front-loaded, I guess, with this image of a pyramid. So he was like, well, how do I know that I'm actually going to see what you want me to see? So they came up with this idea that they'd get 5 different people to remote view Mars, 9 different locations, Some of them would have absolutely nothing there, and some of them would be specific points of interest. Mm. Yeah?
Okay.
And the following is the third psychic probe of Mars, which was backed up by four other people. And the results... This isn't really spoken like the last bit was, but it says, at the start of the viewing session, each viewer was instructed first to locate Mars. From this initial contact, general information concerning overall conditions on Mars was described. Since the coordinate site was of most interest, we'll move directly on to that. All of the participants first described locating a crater of large dimensions. Between them, they described a large structure on the crater's lip and a complex of structures further down in the crater's floor. The crater. The crater is of an impact type, but in dimensions, it is seen to be larger than, by comparison, the crater in Arizona, which is quite a famous one. It contains drifting sand dunes, but also apparently several different types of debris compared to being crunchy like walking on seashells or pumice-like. It's warmer towards the bottom, with kinds of debris that appear not to have originated within the original impact. This debris is described as cinders, hardened magma, and other kind of melt that has been solidified. It's moisture was also noted. The presence of subterranean cavities, both natural and non-natural, was noted in some cases with specifics. The structure on the lip of the crater was seen by all participants to be of extraordinary size. Compared to the rest of the crater's environment, it towers above the lip and the rest of the terrain and was consistently described by the team as a pyramid. It was described as evidence of past civilization on Mars, as we have on Earth, in the pyramids, and long before that. It doesn't appear that... This is an actual statement by one of the people. It doesn't appear that what I'm seeing is a natural or physicality of the planet. It's old. Now I'm getting the impression of white. Looking a little toward the precipice or whatever it is, it would appear to be mountainous surface. A mountainous kind of structure... I'll draw you a picture of it because I don't quite know what it is. All I can give you is the shape, and they draw a rough outline of a pyramid. Another one said it made the most lengthy study of this monumental structure after he had, as all had, gotten over his surprise. He said, "If this were on Earth, I would say the feeling was man-made. It has that kind of feeling to it, but I know this is Mars. I think you can see my dilemma, my confusion. Okay, I'm going to try it one more time. It's got flat surfaces, patterned, it's buried, angles, crisp lines, sloping up, down, man-made, a powdery covering. It's a pyramid." And he draws a picture of a pyramid.
Could he see if there was individual, like, bricks or anything on there? Or just the shape of a pyramid?
Just the shape of a pyramid, but it gets clearer as we go on. He says it's got a specific purpose. It's there for a reason. It's patterned. It has an open interior with chambers, yellowish colour, and very old. Participant D, these are unknown. We don't know the names or identities of any of these participants. They just gave them... designations.
So this isn't Swan and Sherman.
Swan is one of them, but I don't know which participant Swan was.
Okay, I'm with you.
So participant B made a post-session drawing of the structure as he conceived it to be. He says, "I am including a post-session drawing. This is as detailed as I can make it. It is a drawing of the pyramid and its interior chambers. This pyramid is huge, very, very tall. It has a very strange feeling about it. When I was in the chamber, I had a feeling I was in a huge cavern, yet it was divided in some way. I didn't see any walls, but I knew it had different areas or divisions. I've left them out in my drawing, but there is no way I could draw them in. One thing I did include in the drawing is a gap or channel separating the room into two sides. I've drawn only one additional chamber, although I feel that there are several other chambers. I feel these are all interconnected in some way. In chamber one is a pendulum, or something suspended. I perceived movement or activity while in this chamber, and I feel this activity was coming from this suspended object. In considering this suspended object, I have a strong feeling that this pyramid was built for and still serves a very important specific purpose. This was not constructed 100,000 years ago and then forgotten. This may be a big time clock of our solar system, or a huge time capsule, or a teleportation station to send one to the home of its builders. For whatever purpose, this pyramid is important. And there is a picture of the pyramid and its interior chambers
cool.
with some kind of suspended object. They also noted, I'm not going to read all through this because we are pushing for time already. I'd love to go further into this book, even deeper. But they also noted within the crater that there was possible magma, like volcano outlets, magma outlets that were producing heat. There was structures and buildings near this magma vent. With what looked like roads or avenues, plazas, if you like, connecting the buildings and structures. Various designs of structures were illustrated by the participants. No one ever draws any doors, though, for some reason. I don't know why. It's very interesting that they all indicated... They all indicate the presence of underground works directly beneath the structures, which are apparently mix of mounded, rounded, and squarish proportions. These structures are indicated to have been intakes of some kind, or perhaps outtakes. They are interspersed by broad platforms or avenues and are filled with debris, of both drifting sand or soil, as well as debris that is relatable to an explosion of some kind. Intense enough to have brought about lava-like ejecta and have caused melt in some areas. It's supposed by them that either what this civilization, shall we call it, was some kind of groundworks, mining, something like that. It's supposed by them that it actually caused the eruption to happen, which caused the devastation of these structures, and then... the place was abandoned by whoever built it. What is interesting to me is that a few episodes ago we discussed Egypt and not knowing who or what built the Egyptian pyramids. We're now seeing that there is evidence of the same kind of structures on Mars, also abandoned potentially thousands of years ago.
Yeah, isn't a triangle or a pyramid the strongest shape?
It is.
That's what you said, or was it? Yeah. I'm sure. You must have.
Yes, it is the strongest shape in engineering.
So they use it
for
bridges, don't they?
Yeah, when you make like a truss. Yeah. They make them out of triangles because it distributes the weight evenly.
So could this suggest, possibly, that there's more secrets to the pyramid or triangle that we just don't know about? Like, these civilizations seem to know something about... like, why is it always pyramids? They're all over the world, and now they're on Mars.
Yeah.
Ah, it's weird. It's very weird. But it's odd because you went from vegetables to worms...
to pyramids.
To pyramids. And the pyramids... seem more believable
than the worms and the vegetables. Yeah. I know what you mean.
Wow, that is a bizarre one. But they've not found any evidence for actual life on Mars yet.
Not that we've been told about publicly.
Yeah.
But obviously, NASA, as we've said before, stands... actually stands for National Aeronautics and Space Administration, but its pet name is Never a Straight Answer.
Yeah, true.
Because they never tell us what they're actually looking at. Mm-hmm. Or, we've heard about airbrushed photos of the moon where they've airbrush things out. The photos that we've seen of Mars, if you look online at the Viking lander, all you're going to see is a red planet with some rocks. The same with like the Curiosity mission, the rover and that sort of thing. There's three rovers on Mars, I think, currently. We only ever see pictures of rocks.
Is Mars actually red? Or like a reddy orange?
Yeah, because it's got a lot of like iron oxide in the surface of Mars. So yeah, the surface of Mars is a lot redder than Earth.
Because some conspiracy theorists think that NASA airbrushed Mars to make it look more red than
they
it do. Actually
is. Or they did, yeah. In some of those original Viking photos, if you look at like the Curiosity photos. You'll see that Mars actually has like a bluer sort of sky. Not as blue as here on Earth, because it's a carbon dioxide atmosphere. It's nowhere near as thick an atmosphere on Mars. And also the sunsets a different color as well. Like here on Earth, we're used to seeing red on the sunset, where on Mars, very vibrant blue sunset. So, yeah. It's an interesting planet and an interesting take on Mars, because I never actually got to the end of this book when we last did the episode on Ingo Swann, and I now kick myself that I didn't, because it's like the end of this book, particularly this extended edition, is so interesting. I never knew that they'd remote viewed Mars and found so much on it.
Well, before we go to the scale, I have to ask you personally.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you believe in remote viewing? Because we can't do a scale without like seeing where we're both at with actual remote viewing. Do you know what I mean?
I'd say probably a solid 8.5.
Okay, so you believe that it is a real thing.
Considering how many times people like Ingo Swann proved that they could actually perceive what somebody wanted them to perceive. Like the old test was like put a picture in an envelope and ask them to see what was on the picture that they can't see because it's inside an envelope. And Ingo Swann was very good at that. He obviously said that he doesn't have a 100% success rate.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody does when remote viewing. It's all up for a little bit of speculation. But I have heard a lot of people who get into this remote viewing or astral projection or whatever you want to call it, this kind of thing, they can intuitively tell things that they shouldn't be able to know by any normal means.
And it has been proven. And it's
been correct sort of many times. So, yeah, I'd say I believe in it. I even actually at one point went and signed up to a course to learn how to do it. I was absolutely terrible at it, and to be honest, I just kind of gave up. I didn't give it enough time, really, to test myself to see if I was any good at it or not. Maybe one day I'll have a look at it, I don't know. But yeah, I do believe that some people are very gifted in it. In fact, in this book, when you get further than all moon and axle rod and all that sort of thing, Ingo does go on about like telepathy and the concept of the human race being psychic. We've heard of like alien visitors being able to speak telepathically to people and that sort of thing. And he actually promotes the idea that humans in general are a telepathic psychic species. We just don't know it. We're not trained to be that way. Because we vocalize things and use our normal senses, our normal five senses, the sixth sense should be sort of psychic or telepathic in some way.
So that would be a bit like How I Met Your Mother. Do you remember when they were all talking to each other through thought?
Yeah.
It'd be a bit like that.
It could be, yeah.
I feel like if I was to learn this kind of thing, I would easily get distracted. So I would be thinking more along the lines of, oh, does Morrison's sell those donuts that I like? Let me just teleport there and see. Oh, right, okay, now I'll go for a drive and go get them. Or, no, they don't have them, I'm not going to go out of the house.
Do you know what I mean? From what I gathered from like the course that I took, it's not as clear and crystal as actually being there. You know, it's not like you're actually stood in Morrison's looking at donuts. You know, it's more just perceiving, I can perceive some kind of round shape with sugary crystals. So I don't really get it myself.
So bizarre.
But I do believe that there's got to be a certain amount of it in humans innately, I think. And I think this is possibly part of the reason why children see ghosts and then adults don't so much, because you start losing these abilities as you become more grounded in life in general and civilization, whereas children are more open to these things. I think if we as a species trained children in these abilities from early life, we could develop some vastly different culture.
I would be worried about a super army of telepathic children. That's more like an American.
I think you're militarizing things too much.
But then I feel like American government would do that.
Oh, they would, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, it's the American government and the military and stuff that asked Ingo Swann to start training army officials and whatnot.
Yeah.
In this kind of thing for intelligence. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give it a solid, no messing, I'm going to give it a
7.4. 7.4?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I'm going to be honest with you. I like the idea of there being pyramids on Mars and they've got a success rate and stuff. I can't fully get invested in remote viewing when they're predicting worms and vegetables, but then there is none of that kind of thing. And then it was kind of suggested
it could be, but we've never been shown it in the same way that we've never been shown the picture of the pyramid.
Yeah, I mean, is that a bit of a cop out though? If someone's like, "Oh, I couldn't see anything, but here's a picture of a pyramid. Can you see it now?" And they're like, "Oh, yes."
Ah, but it was only Ingo. Out of the five people that did that, it was only Ingo that was ever shown the picture of the pyramid. And that's why he got four other people and they decided to remote view 9 different locations and only one of them had a pyramid in it. And they all saw that pyramid.
Such a grey area, man. I feel like you'd be onto a winner if you didn't mention worms and vegetables, but you have to because it's in the book, so I get it. I don't know. It's just I'm kind of going from the same approach like I do with most things, whether it's ghosts or whatever. I'm like on the fence until I see some real, real proper evidence. I don't really know.
I'm going to give it a solid 8.8.
8.8?
Yeah, I am. I like the story of Ingo Swann. And I, if you actually read the book, I think he's got some really good concepts and like about life and, you know, his approach and his aptitude to his psychic abilities and stuff. He's very open and honest in his writings. And I think if he saw it, he saw it.
Okay.
And there's a good chance that it's there. For other people, you know, if we were to learn this ability for remote viewing and tried it ourselves, if we had the coordinates, maybe we'd see what he saw.
I'd like to speak to someone that actually does astro projection or remote viewing. I think that would probably sway me a bit more or help me understand it a bit more.
Okay, well, let's put it out there to the people listening and watching. YouTube, this one might blow up on YouTube. You never know. Ingo Swann is a big subject for us on YouTube. If you are a remote viewer and you'd like to come on and speak to us about it, I know we've said that we're not really having guests too often, but you know, I think this is a good opportunity if we could get someone who claims to be good at remote viewing and tell us a little bit more about it. I'd take that opportunity. Would you?
Yes, but they have to be able to back it up. I don't want just some random person being like, yeah, I can do that. There's mushrooms in Uranus. Do you know what I mean? And then we're all just supposed to go, oh, yeah, well, they said there's mushrooms in Uranus, so I guess we've all got mushrooms in our anus. I don't know why I went for the planet Uranus. But
I don't know.
I just feel like they'd have to back it up. They'd have to have something to be able to show us to say, yeah, I can do this thing. I went to Saturn and I saw like some caves or whatever.
Well, I don't know of anybody else outside of this book that has claimed to remote view other planets. But you never know. Who knows? We'll see what responses we get.
He's passed on since, hasn't he?
Yes, Ingo is no longer with us. He's no longer part of the mortal coil, I'm afraid.
What about Swanson, or whatever his name is, Sherman? Is he still about? Do you know?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Let's reach out to him.
I don't know. Well, the problem is we don't know who the other five who've actually visited this pyramid are. We know that one was a well-known psychic with a long track record of success. Two was a psychic who received some training in remote viewing under Ingo Swann. Three was an individual who claimed occasional psychic insights, but never before participated in any experiment, much less of the kind at hand. Another was an individual who claimed no psychic gifts, but who was a very intelligent, highly placed official in an important intelligence agency, and who participated only after ensuring that an anonymity would forever be maintained. And then Ingo Swann himself.
How do we know Sherman's not in the room now if he saw Ingo Swann on a chair?
We don't.
He could be watching us right now.
We don't know. We don't know that.
Well, no, it's very interesting. I don't know how to feel about it.
Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that was Ingo Swann. I think this will probably be the last time we visit Ingo Swann, unless we get a remote viewer in, like we said, who wants to come on the show.
With evidence of mushrooms in Uranus.
In your anus.
That's what I want. No, I don't want mushrooms in my anus. I want evidence of mushrooms on Uranus or something similar, and then I'll believe it a bit more.
Right. Okay. And until next week, I've been Pirate.
I'm Josh.
This has been Paranormality UK. Ta-ta.
Ta-ta.
Even the busiest of holiday schedules is no match for Alo Moves, the streaming wellness platform where you can sculpt your muscles, unwind with a yoga class, or even learn the art of awareness with their latest meditation offerings. On demand, whenever works for you. And right now, for Cyber Week, you can get almost 40% off your one-year membership with great deals on six-month and monthly memberships, too. Start saving today at allomoves.com. Allomoves.com.
Oh my God, it's the coolest thing ever. Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? Well, check this out. It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. They ship Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. Seriously. So if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT.
What makes a great pair of glasses? At Warby Parker, it's all the invisible extras without the extra cost. Their designer quality frames start at $95, including prescription lenses, plus scratch-resistant, smudge-resistant, and anti-reflective coatings, and UV protection, and free adjustments for life. To find your next pair of glasses, sunglasses, or contact lenses, or to find the Warby Parker store nearest you, head over to warbyparker.com. That's warbyparker.com.
All right, we're all set for the party. I've trimmed the tree, hung the mistletoe, and paired all those weird-shaped knives and forks with the appropriate cheeses. And I plugged in the Bartesian.
Bartesian?
It's a home cocktail maker that makes over 60 premium cocktails, plus a whole lot of seasonal favorites, too. I just got it for 50 off. So, how about a Klosmopolitan or a mistletoe margarita?
I'm thirsty.
Watch!
I just pop in a capsule, choose my strength, and...
Wow, it's beginning to feel more seasonal in here already.
If your holiday party doesn't have a bartender, then you become the bartender. Unless you've got a Bartesian, because Bartesian crafts every cocktail perfectly in as little as 30 seconds. And I just got it for $50 off.
'Tis the season to be jollier.
Add some holiday flavor to every celebration with the sleek, sophisticated home cocktail maker, Bartesian. Get $50 off any cocktail maker at bartesian.com/cocktail. That's BARTESIAN.com/cocktail.